Oh, yeah, I was saying that I think these were the two persons that surprised me the most. Because I know my mother, she's always been very concerned about her children, about their well-being, their health, and this, all these things. She was this way all the time, you know, even in good health. And I imagine my father was the same, but I know he was, but in a more quiet way. He wouldn't stress it so much as my mother was always stressing this. And when my mother came over, I thought that she was going to take it pretty hard, or that she was going to show it. Which I was afraid of is that she would get very lonely or whatever, or hurt, you know, or something, concerned, over concerned. But it turned out that it was the complete opposite. I'm sure she was very concerned, but she showed a lot of strength by not showing it.
What did she say, Mr. Caesar? Were you there when she talked to him about
it? Yes. Yes. Let me tell you what my father said first. This is what Caesar told me. I wasn't there either of the times, but I had already talked to Caesar, and the same thing, almost exactly the same things that I told Caesar day before, so my father told him the next day or whenever he went in there, that you know, that he thought that he was very concerned, and he thought that he had gone long enough, you know, that I think this was about the 17th day, I believe I said, or 16th, 17th day, and that should be enough, that he had already accomplished that people would understand that with this length of time it's a very, very great sacrifice going without eating this length of time. And I think Caesar talked to him and consoled him and told him that not to worry, that he was all right, and he assured him that he wouldn't be too long before he would break his fast. Now, my mother never did ask him to stop or anything like that. She never asked him to quit the fast. And although I talked to my mother, and not in front of Caesar, but by ourselves, and I said that, what did she think? You know, that maybe we should talk to him and try to, us being very close to him, a part of the family, of his family, that maybe we should try and use a little pressure or something. And she said no. She said he knows what he's doing, and just pray to God that everything will turn all right. He says I'm confident that he's okay, and he will be okay, because he's a very strong believer. When he believes in something, he says, you know, your brother, he believes very strongly in things, and. He knows that God is with him, and I'm sure of that. I'm very confident. So I say, I am concerned, but I will not ask him to stop. This will be his own decision. That's what really surprised me, because she was so strong, and she showed it this way. When I talked to him, this was before either Mom or Dad talked to him, or my dad talked to him, it's a day or so before. I asked him to see him by himself, so I had this in mind. I wanted to, I was very worried by this time, you know. I knew that he was getting very weak because of, you know, I mentioned in our conversation before that at first he used to walk, and then he didn't walk anymore. Then the only thing he used to do is to get up to the, we had to carry him to the restroom, and I could feel, you know, you can feel when you're carrying somebody. At first he was carrying his own weight, and then it started getting heavier, and about this time it was getting very heavy, you know. That means that he was actually, you had to carry him. So I knew that he was getting very weak, so I went in and talked to him, and I seen him, he was in pain. I could tell he was in great pain that particular day. I asked him if he had any pain. He said no, just a little on his legs. But he says, no, he says it's because of lack of exercise. So I kept on talking to him, and I asked him to, that like everybody else, I guess I felt, you know, that it was, it had gone long enough, and that I'm sure that his fast had already accomplished what it was meant to accomplish, and I pleaded with him to, you know, think it very seriously and think about the rest of the people, that there were a lot of people that were hurting. They were hurting for him, and he was making a lot of people hurt, you know. I was talking for myself, including myself, I guess. And he assured me, says, to be patient, that it would be just not too much longer. So then I asked him, well, please tell me how much longer so I can rest a little, so I can feel a little, so I can feel better, you know, and not, I know that there's an end, and then I can just, you know, probably relax a little. He said, no, he says, I'm not going to tell you that, he says, because I didn't even know myself. And so I felt pretty bad, and I guess I shed a few tears there and asked him, you know. I said, well, to forgive me for doubting his I guess I used the word wisdom or something, you know, because I told him I was sure that he always was right, or most of the time was right, and that I was confident he knew what he was doing, but it also could injure his health, and it was the people would suffer. A lot of people would suffer if anything happened to him on account of this. So then he consoled me a little and told me to be strong, you know. Says, I know you joined with me now, you know, I know you're committed, and says, you're going to have to be strong. We can't, we will never be able to make this movement go if you don't think the other way. So you just have to be strong, not physically, but strong, I guess, spiritually, I guess it was saying, and to just to understand, and that would help me a lot, you know, just to understand and pray for him, or for all of us, and that would make me feel better. So I did. Yes, I forgot to mention this. That was, actually, he said that after my father talked to him, I'm sure, yes. He thought that, I had talked to my father after that, and called me again one day. I was there, he says, my father just talked to me. And he says, he's old, he says, but you should talk to him too, you know, you and Helen. And of course, my mother, he said, I'm not worried about it. He says, but you should talk to my dad and assure him that I'm okay, that I'm fine, and please don't conspire against me please not to do it, because that would make him feel very bad. It would make it very hard on him. He knew that we were trying to do this, and from there on, I guess we all understood, of course. We were very concerned, but we understood. Manuel used to spend quite a bit of time with him, and this day he was, this was before Mass. One day in the evening before Mass, Manuel was in there with him, and there were some people from out of town. They had just gotten in, and for the first time they had, this was towards the end of the fast. And there was somebody outside the door in the
chapel part of it, what we were using as a chapel, always guarding there so nobody would just barge in. He would go and knock and say, somebody's here and they want to see you. Philip, yes. Philip Veracruz. So these people, it was about three persons, an older couple and another young lady. And I forget where they were from, but they were from up north someplace, and they wanted to see him right away, if it were possible. They talked to Philip, and Philip said that he was going to check that there was somebody in there with him, but we'll check if he could see somebody else before mass. So Philip, rather, knocks on the door and says, there's three persons here that they're from out of town. They're here for the first time, and they wonder if they could come in and see Caesar. And Manuel, with his always his jokes, he says, well, tell him to wait a little because he's just finishing his sandwich. And he can see, he's just finishing his sandwich, and you'll see him in a little while. You know, it's Manuel always comes out with something like that, so it was kind of humorous there for a little while.
And what about those two guys that, you know, came and got the wine?
Oh, yes, this was, we were having nightly masses. Yes, we were having masses every night, and the Father Day was in charge of saying mass every night. He had he had a little box there in the corner. He has his vestments, his robes and everything that he wears, and also his altar wine. It was in a gallon jug. It was in this little box, and we set it in the corner of the chapel, and he put some stuff over a blanket or something. He had been there for about two or three days. He just came in the evening, got his vestments and prepared his wine bottle and everything, and nobody would bother. One day, a couple of our strikers, the bachelor strikers, younger men, were there, and I guess they were snooping around, and they came across this Father Day's property, and they seen there was a gallon of wine there, and it's a good ultra wine, you know. So they decided they were going to have, there wasn't too many people around, this was later in the evening when most of the people had left or they were out in the fire. Yes, this wasn't the chapel part of it, they were supposed to be guarding. So I guess I had a snort or two of it, a slug or two, and then they started talking, but their voices, I heard this from Caesar, right? So he says that he heard them talking in a normal way, and then their voices starting to increase, and the tone, the pitch was starting to get higher. You know, when you're drinking, you start talking a little louder. And anyways, they said, got pretty loud, you know, they weren't arguing or anything, they were just a natural conversation, but loud, you know. So he said, oh, I bet they're drinking. And we had instructions, nobody was to drink on the premises, for many reasons. So by this time, they had already gone out to the fire. They had already, I don't know if they took the gallon with them or not, but they must have had a container or cups that they filled up and went to the fire. So even from the fire, you know, where it was, the bonfire, he could still hear them in a loud voice. So he got up. I think, I don't know if somebody helped him or not, I wasn't there. So anyway, somebody helped him out there, and he went to where these two guys were, and he talked to them, that he wanted to talk to them. Is this you fellows been having some to drink? Or I guess he asked them that. And, well, they admitted that they did, you know. He says, well, we were instructed that there weren't supposed to be any drinks or any drinking during this period. He says, well, they confessed that they had that run into Father's Day stash there, and it was just, you know, nothing else to do, so they thought it wouldn't hurt to have a little holy wine. So it was, after that, they moved Father Day's belongings into his room under his bed, and I think it was safe after that.
You know those crosses that you made?
Oh, yes. they were made out of cuttings. This cuttings out of the grapevine.
Cuttings.
Cuttings, yes.
What are cuttings?
Cuttings is what you prune out of the vine. The vine that you prune. They call them cuttings. The cane, yes, the cane. About the well, he went to the 40 acres on the seventh day of the fast, I believe it was. So that same night, somebody came up with the idea that, like I told you before, that they were bringing in relics and all these things, you know, the believers were bringing a lot of things. And somebody suggested that, or came up with the idea that it would be nice to have some little crosses made about 2.5-3 inches in size, you know, the length of it, and out of wood or something. And we thought it was a good idea. And then says every day he goes on the fast, we'll pin one up to the header of the door, up above the header, and now we'll know exactly how many days anybody comes in. Just count the crosses and they will know immediately how long he's been on the fast. And somebody else suggested that it would be very nice if we could make him out of these grapevines, the cuttings. So I was commissioned to do this. I went out and and there were Jemara cuttings. I went to the Jemara fields, which is close, the closest one by, and I picked up some. There were still prunings on the ground. I picked some of the, I selected some of the ones that I thought I could use. Came back and I cut those crosses up. We tied them up and we made, quite a few of them. And every night at Mass, during the Mass, somebody would present one of these crosses, one of his relatives. I got to present one day. His children, each one of his children presented one, my mother, my dad, and so forth, and Helen. And that's what happened with the crosses.
Well, when the people brought these relics, did somebody put them right up on the wall right away, right around where the Virgin was? Some of them.
The very first few, they were doing that, but then after about the second day of the Mass, somebody, I think they started offering during the Mass. They would hold them, and then there was a period during the Mass that for the offertory, and they would come in and offer their whatever they had to offer.
And left
them there, right. And then after that, they would somebody would pin them in the right places or to where they would.
And then, but they brought all kinds of other things too that couldn't be pinned up, huh? And so those had to be.
Right. They were just set on the floor, laid against the wall. Some of the objects were bigger. About the very close to the end of the fest, about the 18th day, I believe it was, the 20th or 18th day, somewhere around there, somebody came up with the idea. I forget who it was that brought it up. I believe it was Manuel. I'm not sure, but I think he was the one, or Leroy, one of the two, that it would be very nice to have a symbol put up at the 40 acres, somewhere in the 40 acres, that would remind us something big that could be seen easily, that would remind us of the fest every time we seen it, or as years went by, that we could always say, well, this was erected or done during the time of the fest. Somebody suggested a huge cross as big as we could get it, and I was commissioned also for this. I found out that to make it out of any other material or fine lumber, or it was just terribly expensive, and it wouldn't, you just couldn't get timbers that big. So I figured that maybe we could use some old power poles. So I went to the power company and I asked them for some, they have some of these poles there. And they said that, yes, that they would give them to me. They gave me, I selected the ones I wanted, and they even carried them for us. They towed them for us to the 40 acres. So I got busy with the help of Mike, and constructed a cross, which was about just right around 30 foot in height from the ground up, and then about 6 foot in the ground. And
was pretty huge, and we made it, dug a hole in the corner of the 40 acres where it's laying now, and we borrowed an A-frame from our neighbor Bunty, and right next to our 40 acres there. He gave us a hand with it, and we used this A-frame, and we put it up, and it looked very nice. You know, it was standing right close to it, looked monstrous because the size was very big. And